Nationwide, there are over 100,000 people on waiting lists for organ donations. And for some, time can simply run out. So why is there such a long list, and what can be done about it? Joining me with more on this is Rob Kochik, Executive Director of the Finger Lakes Donor Recovery Network. Welcome.
Hi, Linda.
Thanks for having me. So first, tell us a bit about your organization. What is the Finger Lakes Donor Recovery Network?
Sure. We're one of 58 agencies throughout the United States that are known as an organ procurement organization. And we serve as the liaison between the patients that you just mentioned that are on the waiting list for an organ transplant or someone who needs a cornea transplant or a tissue transplant, and the patients in our local hospitals. We work with about 37 acute care hospitals in a 20-county region of upstate New York. And the patients, hospitals notify our agency at or near the time of a patient's death, and we evaluate those patients to see if they can be potential donors. And when we have either authorization or consent from the family, then we coordinate the organ recovery.
Wow, so you're really at the cutting edge, so to speak, or on the fighting line for organ procurement.
Exactly.
In our area, anyway. Exactly. So why is there such a shortage nationwide? What's contributing to the growth of the need for organs?
Well, the growth for the need for organs probably is multifaceted. One is, and I'm guessing we'll talk a little bit about it later, the success of organ transplants that have been in existence now for about almost 60 years. Baby boomers continue to age. And as we get older, we often have diabetes or hypertension or heart disease or different things. So there's more organ failure, so to speak, which results to more people on the waiting list.
So really, basically, the fact that there are that many more baby boomers in that aging population is driving up the need for more organs.
It is one factor. And just, again, the success of transplants. So not only do baby boomers receive organ transplants, but children and really anyone of any age can develop, you know, kidney disease or heart disease or liver disease.
Now, you just alluded to the fact that there's been a greater success over the last 60 years. So what organs are in greatest demand, and where is the greatest transplant success?
Sure. Well, I always answer the first question of what's the greatest need is the organ that I need. That I'm on the waiting list for.
Right. So each person is feeling...
Exactly. From a number standpoint, the majority of patients on the waiting list are waiting for kidney transplants, again, because of the history of hypertension and diabetes and liver failure,
and maybe
kidney failure.
Increase in diabetes nationwide also maybe adding to that need for kidneys?
Absolutely. And then next would probably be the number of patients waiting for liver transplants, heart transplants, then lung transplants, pancreas transplants.
And which are of greatest success? Which have the best success track record?
Most folks are surprised to learn that if I received a kidney transplant today, my success rate for a functioning kidney and the ability to save my life is well over 90-95%.
Well, that's stunning.
Someone who's waiting for a heart transplant can be anywhere between 85-95%. And to think that, you know, here we are in 2013, that we can have such high success rates is just amazing.
It is staggering, because I remember when the first heart transplants were undertaken, and it was very iffy. First of all, even for the to make it through the procedure, but then after a 5-year period, very few survived.
Exactly. So the first kidney transplant was done between two identical twins in 1954, and that was before we knew anything about tissue typing or matching or even the use of immunosuppressant medications to manage that rejection. You know, you mentioned the first heart transplant back in 1967, and it really wasn't until the mid-80s when cyclosporin was the medication that really revolutionized organ donation and transplantation.
Because in what way?
Well, with cyclosporin, which was just such a wonderful,
powerful
anti-rejection medication that it made it possible for us to transplant lungs and hearts and livers along with kidneys. Nowadays, most recipients aren't on cyclosporine anymore because there's even, you know, better medications.
Next generation.
Exactly. And yet that's really what our continued challenge is that, you know, if you donate a kidney to me or I donated a liver or heart to you, our bodies still would recognize that as a foreign organ and we would always be in a constant state of hopefully managed rejection. And so maybe in the future, we'll figure out a way to grow organs or really make it so that we wouldn't have to worry about rejection anymore.
Yeah, I want to get to that actually a little later because I know there is some very exciting new research that's just taken place. Right now, what are the numbers of people that are waiting in upstate New York for
any given day, we have about 750 patients that are on the waiting list. The majority, again, are waiting for kidney transplants. At Strong Memorial Hospital in Rochester, there's over 300 patients. And here at Upstate, there's about 260 patients waiting for kidney transplants.
Wow.
There's about almost 100 patients waiting for liver transplants at Strong. On any given day, there's about 45 or 50 patients who are waiting for heart transplants. I'm proud to say that just earlier this week, we coordinated a heart donation, and that heart was successfully transplanted into a patient at Strong.
Wow, that must feel really, really like a tremendous success. So how would you say this shortage is affecting lives?
The shortage, unfortunately, means that in New York State, in any given year, approximately 600 patients die on the waiting list. There's other patients that are removed from the waiting list because they waited too long and they became too sick that even if an organ became available today, they wouldn't be able to accept it. And thankfully, some patients, their condition improves where the physicians might have thought they needed an organ and then find that they don't anymore and they were removed. But 600 patients die each year in New York State on that waiting list.
So if organ donation increased, then some of these deaths could be avoided.
Absolutely, which is really why we encourage everyone to consider making that very personal decision to give the gift of life.
Well, tell us about some ways that people can donate organs.
Well, first and foremost, we would just really encourage all of your listeners today to ask themselves, is this something that I would like to do? And, you know, we can talk a little bit about maybe some of the misunderstandings that there are, some fun facts perhaps that people don't know. Make the personal decision. And you know, our mission from Finger Lakes Donor Recovery Network, of course, is to have universal acceptance that organ donation is a wonderful thing to do. And we'd like everyone to donate. We know that we'll probably never quite get there. And we do as support that if someone says, you know, this is not something I want to do, to make that decision. Next is to have the conversation with your family, to let your family members know exactly what you want. And then if you would like to register to be a donor, there's a way to document your request to be a donor.
Yeah, I want to hold you for a minute. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Rob Kochick. He's the executive director of the Finger Lakes Donor Recovery Network. And we're talking about the growing need for organ donation and how one goes about it. Tell me those three ways we were talking about that you could actually get involved in donation. What are the three circumstances?
Sure. One way to document your wish to be a donor is when you complete your healthcare proxy form. There's an option there where you can document and sign. Second way, you can go to our website, www.donorrecovery.org, and click on the Register Now button. Or when you next visit the DMV office, which we all need to do at least every 8 years, we have an opportunity to authorize the enrollment to enroll in the New York State Donate Life Registry.
But there are different ways to donate. In other words, as a living donor, you could make a donation, or after your death, you could make a donation. Explain that.
Sure. So for living donation, which again, many of your listeners may already know about, is that, you know, we could donate one of our kidneys since we have two. And we could give that to a family member or a friend or someone. We can also at times donate a portion of our liver or a portion of our lungs. And those are surgical procedures and transplants that are performed at the transplant centers. And they have the policies and procedures to do that. Finger Lakes Donor Recovery Network is not actively involved in living donation. The second way that someone can donate their organs is after a neurological brain injury or illness, patient is in the intensive care unit. The doctors and nurses have, over a period of time, performed all of the procedures and treatments, and despite those efforts, the patient then meets the criteria for brain death. And brain death in New York State and in all 50 states is a legal determination of death, which means that we are not in a coma, we are not in a vegetative state. It means that we have lost all brain function, including our ability to breathe on our own. And so the doctors perform tests. They make the determination that the patient's brain is no longer functioning. They're declared legally dead. And that's the time of death that is on the patient's death certificate.
And then still, is it up to the family to make that the decision if it hasn't been put in a living will of some kind?
Yes. So we then, when the patient has been declared brain dead, then we, even before then, have checked the registry to see whether or not the patient has given their legal authorization for consent for donation. And that is equivalent to when we make a will. And when you think about it, you know, you hear rare times that someone is contesting a will. And that's why it's important to make those decisions so that that is legal consent and your family then is no longer burdened with making that decision for you.
I don't want to run out of time, but there's a third way after cardiac death. Can you explain that real quick?
Yes. And the third way is what we call organ donation after cardiac death, which is really the way organ donation started in the 50s and 60s, because that was before we even knew that there was brain death. In this particular case, the patient, again, has a non-recoverable illness or injury. The family makes a decision based on patient wishes or what they think their loved one's wishes would be to determine that they are going to withdraw support and allow a natural death. And if that occurs, and if the patient's heart stops and their respirations stop in a particular period of time, organ recovery can take place after that.
Now, I know there's a new law that's going to soon go into effect that's going to affect New Yorkers. It's called Lauren's Law in October. Tell us about that really briefly, because I don't want to run out of time.
Sure. Lauren's Law is based on a little girl who received a heart transplant a few years ago, and she wanted to do something to really increase donation. So at the DMV office, we will now have a required section to either check, yes, we would like to enroll in the registry, or if we're not quite ready to do that, skip this question. But it will be a required field at the DMV application, as opposed to right now it's optional.
So it's going to at least give people an opportunity to be aware that this is an option for them. They can skip it, but it's to raise awareness in
Absolutely.
Any case. Well, it's an amazingly important thing, obviously, with all these people on waiting lists and at risk of dying without it. So I hope we've raised some people's consciousness, and I thank you so much for coming in and sharing all this very important information with us. My guest has been Rob Kochik, Executive Director of the Finger Lakes Donor Recovery Network.